Health Matters, brought to you by Integrated Rehabilitation Group. We're Fox Sports 1380 Everett.
All right, welcome back to Health Matters, brought to you by Integrated Rehabilitation Group. It's Maury Eskenazi. It's Shannon O'Kelly, and joining us is Dr. Mike McDonald. He's a gastroenterologist from Western Washington Medical Group in Everett. He's also a clinical professor at the University of Washington. He joins us. We're going to talk about GERD. What is GERD again, gentlemen?
What is GERD? So you're asking me that question.
I have GERD, okay. And I'm asking you what GERD is.
Well, you know, the long version is it's gastroesophageal reflux disease. And, of course, GERD is referring to the pathophysiologic mechanism. And doctors always like to think about pathophysiologic mechanisms. But what we're really talking about here is heartburn.
Uh-huh.
So heartburn is the symptoms you get, you know, that burning in the epigastrium going into your chest. You think you're having a heart attack. It's really heartburn. That's why it's called heartburn.
Right.
But the mechanism, we think, is that the acid from your stomach is going up into your esophagus. Now, that's a big deal because your stomach has got pure hydrochloric acid in it. You know, I'm always talking to these people, and they say, oh, I think I got an acidy stomach. But we've all got an acidy stomach. It's pure hydrochloric acid. That's what it is. And as long as it's in your stomach, no problem. But then when it comes up into your esophagus, your esophagus has no way to protect itself against acid, and then you feel burning.
It's different on different people then, right?
And really different on different people. Yeah. That's a really good point.
Well, well, hang on. Let's talk about, you know, the anatomy. Don't you have some kind of valve or sphincter, as you call it, in between your stomach and your esophagus to keep that acid in your stomach and not refluxing back up in your esophagus?
Yeah, that's right. That's the way you're designed, you know, but it's kind of like your knees. They're not designed very well. So at the end of your esophagus, you have something called the lower esophageal sphincter muscle. And, you know, you have these sphincter muscles all over your gut. You know, there's that last one right at your bottom. But you do have...
That's the most famous one.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's next show. That's the following show.
So, but no, this is at the end of the esophagus, being in the stomach, there's a sphincter muscle, and it's supposed to be closed. And then you eat food, and it goes down, it opens up, and then goes in your stomach, it closes up, so nothing comes back.
One-way valve.
One way. It's supposed to be one way. So that's why you can, like, stand on your head and eat food and drink water, and it'll go into your stomach, and if you're an astronaut, you can eat, and that's really good. But for many people, this muscle relaxes. It doesn't work very well. And there's many things that can lead to that, and that's something I suspect we'll be talking about next.
That's what we're going to talk about next. So you're talking about this muscle, this sphincter muscle, that ends up failing or not working well. What causes it to fail or not work well?
It can just relax and not work well. That's kind of like asking, you know, like why some people's knees don't work very well. But the point is that for a lot of people, as they get older, this muscle just doesn't work as well as it used to work. So that's kind of one group of people. But then there's the fact that I can take anybody and I can give them a brandy and a cigar.
Uh-oh.
And I can get them to reflux because it's a smooth muscle, and alcohol is a great smooth muscle relaxer, and people smoke. Nicotine's a great smooth muscle relaxer. As a matter of fact, you know, nicotine is a neurotransmitter. It's actually the thing that's working on that muscle. It has what's called nicotinic receptors in it, so it's like just designed to make this muscle relax. So, you know, a lot of people smoke and use alcohol, and that will contribute to their acid reflux. Those are kind of the two biggest offenders, I would say, but there's many other offenders.
Are there things that we call trigger foods for this reflux?
Yeah. So the main ones that we would talk about are is coffee. And it's really any kind of coffee. People say, oh, I drink decaffeinated coffee. Well, oh, congratulations. because, you know, there's about 1,000 different chemicals in coffee that's doing about 1,000 different things, and caffeine is just one of them. So even decaffeinated coffee can predispose people to reflux. So that's probably one of the major foods. And then the other things we talk about are chocolates and mints. You know, chocolates have menthol xanthines in them, and that's kind of like a lot like caffeine. And mints and other things that can cause people to have acid reflux. And those are really the main targets. But the other trigger foods you're talking about are things like, well, you know, spaghetti sauce and orange juice and the really acidy foods. Now, those don't really make those don't really make the muscle, the lower esophageal sphincter muscle, not work. But if you've got heartburn and acid reflux problems, it's irritated down there, that doesn't feel so good going down.
Is this hereditary? Because when I was a kid, I mean, we gave out Tums for Halloween, for God's sakes. I mean, it just ran
in your family.
It ran in my family. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think things run in families. You know, there's a lot of bowel and GI issues that I think clearly run in families. We don't call them hereditary like in Mendelian inheritance or anything, but sure, they run in families. And then the other things, that the biggest things that people can do, you know, this is what we call lifestyle modification. You know, some guy comes in, he's got heartburn, acid reflux, and the thing is, they can do all these lifestyle modifications to make themselves better and won't need any kind of medications at all.
Right.
And so in addition to eliminating all of these foods, you can do things like not eat anything 3 hours before you go to bed. 4 hours before you go to bed is better. Fatty foods, they're not making that muscle work less, but fatty foods hang around in your stomach longer, and the longer all that stuff's in your stomach, then there's more acid and it can reflux. And the other thing is, so we're talking about that muscle not working very well. Well, if you think about it, when I'm up running around during the day, I've got gravity working for me, holding stuff in my stomach. But when I lay down to go to bed at night, that stuff can come up. And for a lot of people, that's the problem. So besides not eating before you go to bed, some people can put the head of their bed up, you know, 6 to 8
inches. 2x4s.
2x4s, very good way to do it. Water beds are trouble. But the issue is, but for some people, you know, they wake up in the middle of the night. They say, gee, I don't have heartburn. But in the middle of the night, all of a sudden what's in their stomach is in their mouth, and it's really an unpleasant way to wake up. And people can aspirate. There's this thing called aspiration pneumonia. That's probably the trigger for that.
I used to wake up and not be able to breathe. Like, I was, like, gasping and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're the guy we're looking for.
Yeah, no, you're speaking of the choir.
That's
here,
end
pal.
Stage. That's end stage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the combination of GERD and
sleep apnea,
yeah.
Which is
do antacids, do they eventually make it worse if you take those? Of course, because that's another thing. I used to eat those like candy, too.
Yes, especially if you're eating Tums. Of course,
yeah.
If you're a woman, that's great. It's got all that calcium.
Right, yeah, calcium,
if you're
a guy,
you're going to get a kidney stone.
But, oh, wow.
But the...
wow. That's
okay, but now you're opening...
Just full of good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you're talking about treatment, you know, there's lots of treatment to treat. And I'm nervous because there's so much to cover. But, you know, there's this stepwise thing. You know, if somebody occasionally has acid reflux and they can just do these lifestyle modifications, they don't need anything. And then there's the person that occasionally has acid reflux and heartburn. It really gets their attention. They say, oh, that really got my attention. And those are the kind of people who can take Tums or Rolaids or Maalox from Atlanta. And those are antacids that work. They work right away. They get rid of the acid and people feel better. But they don't work very long. But it's the right answer for people that occasionally have symptoms.
So those are the people that go out and they have a little bit too much to eat or drink and they don't feel good. They take that and life's good. But, yeah, that would be the step one people then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're probably not going to get into too much trouble with those medications. You know, if you take enough Maalox, you'll get diarrhea because it's magnesium. And if you take enough calcium, who knows what will happen.
Yeah.
But then there are people who have more frequent symptoms, and especially the people that are, like, waking up at night and stuff. And the next step up is taking what's... we call the H2 blockers, and you would call Tagamet, Zantac.
Is Pepcid one of those?
Pepcid, and then Pepcid AC. Those are now over-the-counter.
Right.
And those medications, if they work for you, that's great.
Now, is that what you take? You take those? Do you take those every day, or you take those before a meal?
Well, those medications, you take them when you need them.
Okay.
And, you know, I think where you're going with that, if you know that you're going to have heartburn after a meal, I mean, it's like the commercials, and of course I don't want to quote the commercials, but those guys, if you know you're going to go eat Mexican food and you know that gives you heartburn, then
right.
Sure, you can take before.
Sure.
But those medications, you have to understand, are very weak, relatively speaking. They only bring the pH of the stomach up above 4 for about 1 or 2 hours a day, and that's really not very much. So those medicines are actually quite weak. We call them the BB guns for treating acid reflux. And if that works for you, though, that's very good. It's the right thing if it's working for you.
So, but they're over-the-counter now, but they used to be prescription. Were they stronger when they're prescription, or...
Well, you can get a stronger prescriptive medication.
When the FDA takes a medication that's a prescription and they put it over the counter, what they did for Tagmet and Zantac is they cut the dose in half. And then they tell you to take two. Interestingly, they did not do that with Prilosec, but we're coming to that.
Okay.
The reason we're coming to that is because, but what happens if that's not working for you? And for, you know, we think of this as like being an iceberg. You know, the people at the bottom, occasional heartburn, then you get worse and worse symptoms. And when you're getting towards the top of the iceberg are the guys who are having symptoms three or more times a week, and especially if they're waking up or stuff like that, and then they need the big guns. And that would be like Prilosec and its cousins. And, you know, when that medicine came out in the late 70s and the early 80s, it was, like, amazing because people have had bad heartburn, acid reflux all their life, and they were miserable and they're very unhappy. They were dramatically better, and that was kind of shocking. And the reason why it was shocking for us back then in medicine is because we knew that acid wasn't the problem. That muscle wasn't working. That's the problem. But it turns out if you get rid of the acid, you get rid of people's symptoms, and they're just happy as a clam, and life can be very good. But again, these are now quite powerful medicines. And because they, unlike Zantac and ranitidine, they'll bring the pH of your stomach down up to almost 7, and if you take enough of it, it'll keep it up at 7 all the time. And, you know, that's really changing the physiology of your stomach right now.
But let's talk about that. If you change the physiology of the stomach, are you still digesting the food properly? I mean, your stomach's acidic for a reason, right?
That's right. So when that medicine first came out, it was so strong that there was these FDA had black box warnings on them. We could only use them for so many weeks, and then we had to tell people they have to stop. And I was at the VA at the time, and those veterans would come in, and they felt great, and they said, that's good. I'm glad I gave you 2 months of complete relief of your symptom. Now I'm stopping your medication. And they were so upset.
I bet.
Now that we've studied this for, you know, going on 30 years now, there's no increased risk of stomach cancer, other issues that we were really worried about. So you have to put this in context. The omeprazole and its cousins are amazingly safe, even though, as you point out, it's really changing the physiology. But if somebody has to be on this long-term for years and years, it better be because they really need it. And there aren't a lot of people that really need it. But the risks are there is a higher incidence of community-acquired pneumonia. There's a higher incidence of C. difficile colitis. And most worrisome to us, a higher incidence of hip fracture in the elderly.
Oh, interesting.
But it's still pretty small numbers. But now I'm going to backtrack here because people who have really bad acid reflux, they're quite happy to be doing this. And there's risk in not controlling your acid reflux because there's damage to your esophagus, and we haven't even talked about
that. That's where we need to go next, is what is the complications of chronic GERDs?
Yeah. So the person that's having symptoms several times a week, we worry then that they're going to have these complications. So here's the issue. If somebody has problems with food getting caught on the way down, or they're losing weight, or they're really sick, or they're barfing blood, you know, we think they should go get checked.
Right.
Because what can happen with all this constant acid is going up into the esophagus, which causes inflammation, and then the body's trying to heal it. So there's this constant cycle of inflammation and repair that causes scarring. Then the body says, you know, I don't like having all this acid here. And there's this thing that's called Barrett's that forms. Barrett's is this abnormal lining of the esophagus. And that's important because this really puts you at risk for esophageal cancer.
Ooh, wow.
And esophageal cancer, you know, is a very big deal. It's a very nasty cancer to have. So that is why we think it's important to, if you have these red flag signs, to be evaluated and also properly treat your acid reflux if you're this guy at the tip of the iceberg that's got this horribly bad acid reflux.
Real quick, how are we doing for time?
We're good.
Okay, yeah, okay. Well, what are red flag signs?
Yes, those are the red flags. The main red flag for acid reflux is that feeling food getting caught on the way down, because that's probably scar tissue causing narrowing, or more fearfully, a tumor. Also, losing weight when you weren't planning on losing weight, if you're yorking up blood, those are the red flag signs. But here's the kicker with Barrett's and the risk of esophageal cancer. There usually are no red signs. So for that person with a lot of acid reflux, not your run-of-the-mill guy, if this has been going on three times a week or more, and you've had acid reflux for 5 years, we would say you should have an endoscopy to go down and look for Barrett's, because Barrett's has no symptoms, no red flags that
Interesting.
You can identify.
We're talking with Dr. Mike McDonald, gastroenterologist from Western Washington Medical Group, also clinical professor from University of Washington. We're talking GERDs. You know, I've been on it, like you said, I've been on it for like almost 20 years, the medication that I'm on. I've recently changed my diet. I've lost a lot of weight. My doctor said I don't have to be on it anymore. So I was off it for a week and then got bad indigestion. So I'm back on it again. So I consider myself just on it. But, you know, I was the smoker. I drank. I ate really spicy foods. What is the patient, demographic you're seeing right now? Who are you seeing?
Well, we see all of that, and it's just exactly like you say. So, you know, we see the classic, you know, the male who thinks he can eat whatever he wants.
More men than women?
No, it's pretty equally split. For the bad things, like esophageal cancer and Barrett's, that is actually Caucasian males are clearly at higher risk than either blacks or women.
Mm-hmm.
So it does break down like that. But for acid reflux symptoms, you know, the burning, the whole business, the issue is the demographic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the issue is they come in all flavors, and
okay.
you just have to be ready for that. So
mm-hmm.
it's like you're talking about the guy who smokes and drinks, and if they quit smoking and quit drinking and their symptoms go away, that is great.
Right.
But then we see these people, you know, 28 years old, thin, doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, and they got horrible acid reflux. And so we see those people too, and then we're stuck. We can't say, gee, quit smoking, quit drinking, lose weight, you know, exercise, don't eat before you go to bed.
Is a component of acid reflux at night, I mean, do you have an irritated throat, or can it affect your inner ears? Because I've also heard that people with this become hoarse because it irritates the vocal cords.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because, you know, we talk about heartburn, and that's the kind of the burning in the middle of the chest, but there's all these different manifestations. First of all, people can have horrible acid reflux and have absolutely no symptoms, and that's kind of, you know, scary but true. And then there's people just like you're talking about where maybe it's just clearing their throat all the time. That might be their only symptom. I'm always
mm-hmm.
going like that, and that might be acid reflux is the cause of that, or the people with a chronic cough. And then the thing that we see commonly is people go to their dentist, and their dentist say, hey, you're missing the enamel on your molars. Go see a gastroenterologist.
Right.
It gets that far up? It refluxes that far up?
It does. I mean, you're talking about, you know, when people wake up in the middle of the night, that's because it's coming all the way up into their throat.
And that's a nasty taste. So that's part of what you'd have is you have a real strong taste in your mouth if you woke up to it?
Yeah, exactly.
People with eating disorders, I'm guessing, too. Right?
Whole other topic,
oh,
huh?
Yeah. There's a thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's for people with bulimia. That's an issue.
Yeah.
It's hydrochloric acid. That's what's in your stomach. And, of course, it's all perfectly designed to, as long as it stays in your stomach.
Is there anything you can do to strengthen that muscle or that sphincter muscle? I mean, obviously, I'm thinking there's probably a surgical procedure that very few people probably you have to have, but is that what the treatment is surgically?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. You know, for one thing, from a medical point of view, we know the problem is that muscle's not working very well. So we've always tried to come up with medications that increase the performance of the muscle, and that has been a big failure. So there's been all these medications that have come, we've tried it, and it's failed or been taken off the market. So there's that group. So the next step up, though, is surgery. And, you know, I'm a internal medicine doctor, I'm not a surgeon, and we don't advocate surgery routinely, but it's a funny story because back in the day, we would say don't get surgery because how do you know you're going to get better? But now people are on Prilosec, like they're 100% better, and they say, I'm great. So we say, oh, you know, maybe if you got surgery, you would get better. So for those people that are really bad, and they're especially the young, we're going to have this for a long time, they don't want to take Prilosec all their life, surgery can be a very good option. And they do this thing called the Nissen fundoplication, and I have to tell you about that because people always come in and they think, well, the surgeon's going to fix it. Well, and I try and tell them, well, they don't exactly fix it. What they're going to do is they're going to take your stomach and they're going to wrap it around your esophagus, and they're going to tie it in a bow, and that's going to prevent stuff from going up. So it's not like they fixed the muscle.
That's awesome.
So how do you learn that?
That's exactly what I want. They're probably by mistake.
The deal is it works great. They have, for those people who need it, and you see, it's only people the top tip of the iceberg.
And what, is there a percentage of people that actually have to have surgery for this?
Well, you see, nobody has to have surgery. This is an elective thing.
Okay.
So if you came to me and said, look, I'm so happy, I'm on Prilosec, and listen, doc, no matter what, you're not operating on me, then you don't get surgery. And then there are people that come in and they say, look, doc, I don't want to take these medicines. This is dumb. It's a Band-Aid. I want surgery. And then those people, assuming they're at the tip of the iceberg, would get surgery. The other big thing about surgery nowadays is it's done laparoscopically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge because, you know, in the olden day, they cut you open. You know, that's the 3-week recovery time. It's 6 weeks before you feel normal. Now they do it laparoscopically. You go in, they do it, and you go home.
Day surgery, huh?
Day surgery.
What about people that have like gastric bypass surgery or that lap band? Do they get GERD from that?
Oh man, you know, the data on that.
It's like I'm playing tennis and just lobbing shots.
Right,
he loves this.
Well, you know, the data on that goes both ways because I was talking to one lap band surgeon and he says, you know, I give you the lap band and I'm giving you a free Nissen fundoplication to take care of your heartburn because they're going to put that tight thing right around there. And then there's other data to say that these people reflux more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a mixed picture with lap band. But, of course, you know, lap band is pretty effective at what it's designed to do.
Right.
And that's get people to lose weight.
Right.
And getting people to lose weight, hopefully, is going to make their reflux less.
We've covered a lot of information. Let's just review and summarize what we're talking about. So first step is modification of lifestyle.
Exactly.
The weight loss, watch your intake of foods.
Quit smoking.
Quit drinking.
Yep.
Slow down on the coffee a little bit.
Moderation in all things.
And then if that doesn't work, then you go move on to
antacids. So Rolaids, Tums, Malax, Mylanta, any of that kind of stuff, just occasionally.
And then the next step is if those aren't helping, obviously come see you.
Yeah, I mean, you can try the, here's what's interesting. You know, you can try Tagamet and Zantac, and as you pointed out, that used to be a prescription medication.
Right.
And you can use that over the counter. And now, Prilosec, that medicine that I'm calling a big gun,
yep.
Now it's over the counter. I mean,
yeah.
That's how safe it's proven to be over the years.
Great.
That's great, great stuff, Dr. Mike McDonald from Western Washington Milk Group. Thank you so much for joining us. We also want to thank Julie Mahler, registered dietitian from Murphy's Corner Physical Therapy. More information, go to the Facebook page. It's the Health Matters IRG Facebook page. Join us for our next show next week at 6 for Tom Lafferty and Karen Mark. I'm Maury Eskenazi. Shannon, have a great Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. I'm Shannon O'Kelly. Stay fit and stay healthy.